Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app. This is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And thank you for listening to the Dom Salvia Show. Happy Friday to us all. Friday the 13th. Ooh, I'm so scared. Thank you for joining us. The phone line is open, as always, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Got Jess on the board working hard for you, for us. Thank you, Jess. Got some sound for you fine folks today. And super happy to announce James Santel, former U.S. Attorney, host of Amicus, the Law Review, playing out on Civic Media here at 9 to 11 a.m. on Saturdays. Jim, it's been too long, man. I'm so
it
super.
It has been.
I'm jazzed as hell to see you,
and
man.
And delighted to be with you in this inaugural week of your new show. Congratulations. Very excited for you, for us, for the entire state of Wisconsin, the entire United States of America.
Man.
How about that?
Man, right? Thank
we're
you,
going
Jim.
Big time.
Right? Yeah, right. And thanks for coming in the Friday before your Saturday show.
Absolutely.
So we can use all your best material here.
Absolutely. As we always say, everything happens on Friday night between 8 and 10 anyway.
Right.
So I haven't planned anything for tomorrow morning at this point. So we're all set to go this afternoon.
Whatever you're planned for ends up being something different anyway,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Cutting room floor. Cutting room floor.
I know we have lots to catch up on with all the different legal cases against the former president, but I also, you know, we haven't talked in a while, Jim. Want to get your sense the debate this week?
Yes.
All the polls say Donald Trump won. If you listen to Donald Trump, I watched it as lots of people did. I don't think Donald Trump won. I think some of the polls are going away from Donald Trump. I thought it was great, Jim. What was your sense? And were there any big issues you think Harris really took it to Trump?
Sure. I think she hit everything, both in terms of substance and process, both. She obviously had the opportunity and used the opportunity to talk about her basic policies in a number of different areas, including things like immigration, yes, and the economy, things that sort of hit people in the pocketbook. I think the other piece of this is that when America goes to the polls in November, as we do every 4 years, we want to put somebody in the White House that we can trust. Now, I don't think we did that in 2016, but for the most part, we want to have somebody there that we like. And even if you're not politically excited about all the presidents of our recent lifetime, the reality is they're all kind of nice guys along the way, with the exception of one. And I think Kamala Harris, early this week, convinced America that she can be trusted, that she is somebody who knows what she's talking about, that will surround herself with people who also are informed and have got it together, and that they should not be worried about America. We'll still have challenges, absolutely, but she's got plans, she's got thoughts, and she provided, I thought, both the stability in terms of temperament and also the humor. I have to say, I think if you didn't watch it on television and you missed, therefore, her caressing her chin from time to time.
The body language.
Looking at Donald when he's talking, yes, again, about dogs and cats in Springfield, Ohio, all these other crazy things, smiling and making fun of that in a way that you and I would do, Dom.
Talk
right?
about extreme.
Right? Exactly, yeah. Right? And I think that's it, too. She's the kind of person, I think, that you would want to go out to breakfast, lunch,
right.
or dinner with.
Yeah.
And again, I think that Americans tend to vote for people, for the most part, who they feel comfortable with in that position of great responsibility.
I thought the contrast with her, you know, positive vision for this country, you know, looking into the camera, saying, you never asked a victim or a witness, you know, are you a Democrat or Republican? I asked you if you're okay.
Right.
And talking about, you know, the work that needs to get done and the hopeful and the joy. And then you hear Donald Trump's closing statements and, you know, we're all going to die,
right.
Jim.
It's apocalyptic, right? Once
it's
again.
It's going to be World War III, and we're a right. failing nation, and everything right. sucks, and I'm the only one that can fix it. Just on that alone, I thought it was a great contrast.
Right, absolutely. He's once again painting this dystopia. And again, if you want a dystopian future,
well, right.
you've got an option.
Yes,
there, right?
there is. Right? There's an option for
absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Recall when, again, his inaugural address, which is all about that, delivered to, well, a few hundred people in the mall that day. But beyond that, again, this is a man who has a very different view, not only about the future of America, but his role in it, which is principally his focus, and again, as you just indicated, Dom, not calling upon Americans to be a part of that. The other part of this, I think, which is my own bias, I think it's the bias of many people, and that is she is not only a lawyer, but she's also a prosecutor. And that's where I come from, too. She is able to identify, not only in that setting, but in others as well, what works, what doesn't. And she's able to put together, I think, in a way that makes sense for people, what is, in fact, meritorious and what isn't, and describe for people the reasons why these things are to be believed and these things are not. She's giving closing statements, I think, in many of these presentations, and I thought that's what she was doing earlier this week as well.
And the baiting him,
right?
What the crowd said as soon as that came out, I'm gonna do something strange. I'm gonna encourage you to go to one of Donald Trump rallies. Right. People are walking out, they're bored. Right. Oh, he just couldn't take it, and he was just waiting. And so he walked right into it, and she was prepared. Coming out and shaking his hand right off the bat.
Absolutely.
I kind of set the stage a little bit, didn't it?
Absolutely. That tone, we recall again the last time we had a woman and a male again on the debate stage, and you had that strange situation where Hillary was walking around and Donald Trump was walking around. A weird situation here. She comes out, she's definitive, she is clear, and it is her hand that goes out and establishes from the get-go that she is in control of this, and she is at least, if not more, she's actually more than that, on the same plane that he is. And she is also gracious. That sends a note of diplomacy, right?
Certainly.
To those people who might think, well, she's off, she's out there. No, this is somebody who said, you know what? I disagree with everything that you say. I don't believe you've got the merits to be the president of the United States of America, but still, I'm going to respect you. I will shake your hand, because that's what civilized people do in America, that also send a clear message about who she will be when she's in the White House.
I might have, you know, Trump shook my hand one time. I don't know if I was on the debate stage. She's a better person than I, perhaps. The Dom Salvia Show, James Santel, 855-752-4842. Kamala Harris for the people. Donald Trump for Donald Trump. I mean, I think Donald Trump is running to stay out of prison.
Right.
I mean, if Donald Trump loses this election, he gets sentenced the end of November. These other trials will continue to go forward. So this isn't really about service to the American people and upholding the Constitution. This is about keeping Donald Trump's ass out of jail.
Absolutely. And he has said clearly that at least with respect to two of those, there's a theory that keeps all of them out from under him. But at least two of those, he will look to the Department of Justice and say, you know what, Mr. Attorney General, acting Attorney General, nominated, confirmed Attorney General, whoever that may be, my goodness, in a Trump administration, second time around, he will look over and say, you need to dismiss these cases. He has promised to do that, and he will do it. Is it appropriate to do it? Absolutely not. There should, as you and I, Dom, have discussed in many other settings, there should be this arm's length separation between the White House and prosecution decisions. Donald Trump will run roughshod over that. And the two cases, again, which we'll talk about this afternoon, I am sure, coming out of Florida and also coming out of D.C., those will go away. Those will go away on January 22nd, maybe the 21st of 2025. And then you can make an argument, believe it or not, that even those other cases for a sitting president to prosecute going forward, there's a non-frivolous argument that even that, you cannot do that while the president is in the White House. Much more complicated, but it does. Absolutely changes. Who we elect in November is going to change not only the geography of America, but for Donald Trump himself, his future now he is a convicted criminal already. He's a felon. We know that already. But his capacity to continue to be at liberty, if you will, and the possibility that people like Judge Mershon, even Tanya Chutkan at some point down the road, may in fact say there's a time that you've got to be spending in detention. It may be federal detention. It may be New York detention. That day could come, and sooner rather than later.
Merrick Garland, the attorney general, spoke to an association of attorneys general, I believe that was the case yesterday. Do we have any sound of that, Jess, from yesterday? No big. If you have some, give me the thumbs up. If not, no big deal. Jim, he wasn't talking about Donald Trump by name, but he was certainly talking about Donald Trump.
Absolutely. And the consequences of what Donald Trump is saying out there and basically wagging his finger at Donald Trump and the people who follow him and say, you know what? we're doing a job on behalf of the people of America. You may not like this administration, but the reality is attorneys general, with the exception of some recently perhaps, should be independent. And how dare you, America, look at the civil servants. I was one of them for 25 years. The civil servants who are not political, who are not partisan, who are coming to work every day doing civil litigation, criminal litigation, investigations, 10,000 people in the Department of Justice who show up, they know what they're doing, and they're not animated by hatred and by partisan
deep state lackeys.
Exactly, that sort of thing. How dare you, he says, threaten us. And when you do that, you not only undermine, frankly, the basic structure of America, but you're also compromising over time the legitimacy, the credibility, the very people you're attacking. If I'm going to work every day and I am now concerned about being threatened and being frankly, even physically attacked, that will impact the nature of the people that you've got working in the Department of Justice. That's the real terror of what Donald Trump is doing. And we see that all the time. We see that today, even as schools are shutting down in Springfield, Ohio, because of bomb scares. This is just absolutely craziness. And it is scary and it's dangerous. And that's what Merrick Garland was telling us yesterday.
And it's given oxygen and it's being allowed and given permission to by Donald Trump and the words and his actions and his words. Jim, has there ever been, as a prosecutor, has there ever been a someone who's prosecuted who didn't feel like they're being persecuted?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. And the reality is that comes along with the package. That is, there's no defendant who I prosecuted in the wake of a grand jury indictment who said, hey, that Jim Santel, he's a terrific guy, right? And again, that's a part of our process, right? We come in, we have a system, and we come out of that system based upon the notion that's in the adversarial process where the government is put to its test. And the defense comes forward and tests that prosecution and puts me to the test, puts prosecutors to the test. That's what our system is all about. You don't have to like me. I don't have to like anybody in the courtroom, but we've got a system here that has integrity to it. And that's also when Donald Trump attacks judges and jurors and staff people, that also goes beyond just what we'd otherwise expect of defendants and defense counsel and prosecutors and everybody else involved. And he's attacking the system and telling America that the very system we've had for 238 years is incredible. Don't believe it.
Folks, you're listening to The Dominic Salvia Show. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, host of Amicus, The Law Review. He's going to stick around with me today. You can join on the lines as well, 855-752-4842. Going to come back with a little bit of that Merrick Garland sound. Sounds like he was dressing down Trump. We'll be right back.
You talk about extreme.
Donald Trump was fired by 81 million people.
Hey, welcome back to the Dominic Salvia Show. Happy Friday to us all. You can join us on the lines, 855-752-4842. Jess will screen you. I got James Santel in studio with me. Callers, be patient. We will get to you. But we're talking about Attorney General Merrick Garland yesterday talking to the Association of Attorneys General.
Yes.
That was you at one point, right, Jim?
Right. We've talked to U.S. attorneys from time sometimes, too. But this is, again, he's talking to even more significant
U.S. Attorney.
All of those folks. Important, again, that's a significant point. He's talking to state attorneys general, right? They're crossing government systems, if you will, federal to state, and saying, you know what, these principles I'm describing, they apply to all of us, right? The federal system, the state system, the local system. And again, not everybody in that room probably embraced everything that Merrick Garland had to say. But there's a basic respect for the office, and there's a basic
regardless of your political leanings, if you're in the law and order business,
absolutely,
you probably generally think that, criminals should be prosecuted.
Exactly. And that our role is to keep people safe and secure, and that's how we do it, right? And our role, as he implicitly said again yesterday, is not to throw people in jail, it's to accomplish justice. And sometimes that means that people do go to jail and go to prison for all kinds of deterrent purposes. But the larger focus, as he was talking about, was to make certain, number one, that we are committed to service, constituents out there. That's 340 million people in America right now. And then also ensuring that you've got the safety and security for the employees in the Attorney's General's office, Attorney's General offices, and then also in U.S. Attorney's offices and other places around the nation.
James Santel, former U.S. Attorney, not right, Attorney General. Right. Let's play some of the sound of Merrick Garland, if you would please, Jess.
For sure. This is about the norms of the justice system.
There you go.
Our norms are a promise that we will not allow this department to be used as a political weapon. Our norms are a promise that we will not allow this nation to become a country where law enforcement is treated as an apparatus of politics. Norms are a promise that we will fiercely protect the independence of this department from political interference in our criminal investigations. The public servants of the Department of Justice do not bend to politics, and that they will not break under pressure.
I mean, yes, absolutely. Thank you for that. I wonder if Bill Barr agreed with that, Jim.
Exactly. And if he would have delivered the same kind of speech, right? If it would have been about the importance of doing things maybe for a president who plainly, Bill Barr did the bidding of Donald Trump in a number of very specific cases. We talked about those in the past. And again, that affirmation of the Department of Justice is, yes, it's a part of an administration, but it is not coming out of the White House. And you're not getting directed.
It's not a White House attorney, man. Right? It's not your personal attorney. It's precisely. Not your consigliere.
Right,
it's,
right. And we look back in history. We've got all those instances. Most notably, I worked for Janet Reno in the past. And most notably, she and Bill Clinton did not get along. She was one of the longest tenured attorneys general in our history. Yeah. And they did not get along. She, among other things, again, sanctioned the Whitewater investigation, led ultimately to his impeachment. But that's the point, right? And you do not want to. You can certainly have a relationship of the sort that Barack Obama had with my boss, Eric Holder. But you also want to make certain that the decisions that you're making there on 10th and Constitution are not being directed. How many times in this administration has the Biden administration also said, we did not know about this decision?
Right, right.
That's the way it should be.
Supposed to be that
way. Absolutely.
855-752-4842. A public servant in her own right, Maggie Dawn, host of the Maggie Dawn Show. Hey, Maggie, welcome. What do you got?
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for covering this. I did not know about Merrick Garland's address. I think what he's saying is really important. And it came to mind that I have never really explained this on the air. I am a Democrat. I've always been a Democrat, but I obviously served as a public lawyer, and I was the chief legal officer for Milwaukee County. So people may be thinking, well, how does that work exactly? And the way it works is I checked my own personal politics at the courthouse door when I showed up to work every day. And I gave objective advice to every single one of my clients, and I advocated for the interests of the residents and citizens and voters of Milwaukee County without fear or prejudice, right? Without bias or preference. That is what civil servants do. By my accounting and my nearly 15 plus years in public service, that's what people are doing. They have their personal preferences, but those are personal and those are for your off hours. When you show up at work, you do the job. That's the dominating characteristic of public servants, especially lawyers in government. The second thing I wanted to say is the intimidation factor is real. When I was advising the Milwaukee County Elections Commission during the 2020 recount in the depths of COVID, my office and myself specifically by name received death threats. I have people that have shown up at my home. That was a very real thing. I got a postcard every month from a guy who never signed his name but threatened me with all sorts of harm.
Wow.
So these things are real, and I think it's important for people to know that. You guys know me pretty well. I don't intimidate, but I don't know that that's the case for every single person, right? I had to work hard to ensure that my staff knew that if you feel unsafe or someone threatens you, you let me know, because I'm the one that takes that heat, not you.
Right.
Right. It is ridiculous to ask public servants to be under threat while they are simply trying to do their job.
Right.
Thanks, guys.
Maggie could not have said it better. Hear. That notion, these are civil servants who are paid to do what is right. And as to your first point, once again, I think, Maggie, you would confirm this as well in your former role as corp counsel. And I was U.S. attorney. When I was an assistant U.S. attorney for 25 years, I can tell you, I will say this under oath, that there was not a single time when we talked about to supervisors, to managers, talked about prosecuting a civil case, a criminal case. And Maggie, I suspect you'd affirm this as well. Never, ever was there any even close invocation of anybody saying, well, gee, what does the Democratic platform say about this? What would be the Republican principles that would guide this? Not a single time was that ever a part of the discussion. It was about the merits, about the law. Did we fight about whether or not particular charges should be presented to a grand jury? Sure, we did. That's a part of the process. Not a single time did anybody in the 30 years of my involvement in the Department of Justice, even several years at the U.S. Department of the Department of Justice in Washington, D.C., never, ever discussion about politics inside important decisions on behalf of the people of
America. So you never, like, put your finger on the board and say, get that guy, he's the Republican, I don't like
absolutely
him.
Absolutely not.
That'd be bad, right?
Absolutely. And you'd be reported, frankly. You'd be the subject of investigations by some internal people who look at
as
you and
there
say,
should be,
there
right?
should be,
That's
absolutely.
How it's supposed to be. We don't want political prosecutions. And just because a politician is getting prosecuted for the crimes that he may have committed, or at least a grand jury has decided
probable cause,
and you go to trial and you take your chances, or you cut a deal, or you just do a little less criming. Folks, this is the Dom Salvia Show. James Santel in the studio, just on the board, 855-752-4842. Listening to the Dom Salvia Show. Phone lines are open. Going to hit them next, 855-752-4842. Merrick Garland speaking yesterday to the Association of Attorneys General, not the U.S. Attorneys Association, had to remind, or not, probably not the folks he was talking to, because he was really talking to the megas and to Trump,
about
how it's supposed to be.
Absolutely.
That you're not supposed to use this department as your personal consigliere to go after your political opponents, to look at prosecutions through the lens of politics. And certainly, you know, the choice of to prosecute something or to not.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding, there's been some story about some money from Egypt that made $10 million, made it to
Absolutely,
Trump's campaign, and Barr poo-pooed that thing. And now they're talking about maybe doing some investigation, at least in Congress, to see what went down. Is that valid, do you think, Jim? What's your understanding of that
Absolutely.
Story?
That particular story, again, as it broke again, I think on a Friday night, thus we could talk about it on Saturday morning, right, Dom? When that story broke, I'm thinking, my gosh, if this had broken and we'd gotten information about it, and maybe the Department of Justice had it at the time, this would be not just a blockbuster, bombshell kind of stuff. This is the sort of thing that would completely derail a normal administration, right? And the fact, again, probably the statute of limitations has run on it, thus the congressional investigations as opposed to a federal investigation leading to some criminal prosecution. But that kind of thing, once again, underscores the notion you follow the facts wherever they may lead. We know, of course, during the Nixon administration that we had some people in main justice. Elliot Richardson, this is a Saturday Night Massacre, decides, no, I'm not going to fire the special prosecutor, Mr. President. You can fire me and I will resign. And yes, he resigns, his deputy resigns, and ultimately, it is Robert Bork who does Richard Nixon's bidding, that kind of integrity inside a Republican administration is the sort of thing that you anticipate in every single administration. That the president tells you to do something that you know is illegal, you've got two choices. You can do it and suffer the consequences, which should be criminal prosecution, or you can say, I'm gone, and you can depart the field.
Can you just, like, quiet quit? You know, just not take the call for a couple of weeks.
Exactly. Oh, I think there are some attorneys general who have said, you know what, I've got to go speak to the law school at Howard University tonight, right. And yeah. I'll talk to the president later on. Uh-huh. A few times when just delaying that conversation, letting time pass, are not a bad thing. But once again, it underscores this importance of this arm's length relationship you've got to have between the White House and the Department of Justice. Not that the Department of Justice, but here's what you can do. I'm sure listeners are saying, well, gee, part of the administration. The administration can certainly say, you know what, Mr. Attorney General, or Madam Attorney General, I want you to focus on environmental cases. I want you to focus on antitrust cases. I want you to focus on civil rights things. And those will all continue. Give some priority to those. What the White House cannot do is say, I want you to prosecute Jim Santel for doing this particular thing, that specific directive, or I want you to dispose of this case,
right,
deep six this case, yeah, because, again, my political allies are on the line here. That specific direction, that's what's problematic.
But we assume that's what happened with Bill Barr.
Absolutely. Right. Right.
At least in one case, right, maybe more. Michael so if it Flynn, happened once right, with right, a Republican, could I mean, it probably wasn't the only time ever, Jim. Right. Right? So it doesn't take many. It only takes a few in the right spot that can, you know, direct the whole thing. Do you think the Bill Barr Justice Department, that they would do the same thing as the Nixon Justice Department? I mean, certainly some of those guys were down for the program.
Right.
Jeffrey Clark,
right,
he was all
Clark
about. I mean, he's ready to sell us all out. You know, there are some folks that were down and some folks that weren't.
Right.
How would you compare the ethics of the Barr Justice Department to that of Bork?
Right. You know, so I think that what you had, certainly at the end there, when you had an acting attorney general who did stand up again, we heard all about this, right? That both the acting attorney general, the deputy went over to the White House, and there was this sort of very confrontational discussion.
Yeah.
The attorney general said, Mr. President, if you do this, if you basically install this associate attorney general named Jeffrey Clark, who's advocating this notion that the 2020 election was stolen, reach out to the states, tell them the same thing, reach out to Congress, tell them to do things to undermine what the American voters have done. If you do that, you're going to get mass resignations. And Donald Trump, again, at that time, late in his administration, said, okay, I'm not going to do that. He backed off. You had that integrity there in the last moments. You'd like to think there, and there certainly were a lot of other people there. Yeah. But again, the Jeffrey Clark example is one where this is a man who's sort of third down in line, third or fourth in line, and he was ready to go, and he was doing the bidding. He put together documents that we ultimately found out about,
yep,
basically articulating these crazy, unsupported, legally unsupported, factually unsupported notions, and he was ready to become the attorney general.
I mean, literally the behavior that Merrick Garland was preaching against
precisely
yesterday.
Yep, absolutely. And it almost happened. Again, you wonder in a second Trump administration, who is, again, he's now out there saying, gee, now I've learned sort of from the first Trump administration. Yeah. Now I know what my powers are. And maybe initially I was guided by all these people, the institutional folks who came in and told me what I can and cannot do.
The first round.
The first round. Right, right. Then,
they,
right. Yeah. And he basically got rid of them over time. Now he comes in, if he comes in on January 20th, now he's ready to go and will put people in those positions. As I say, many of them are appointed. It is the attorney general. It's the deputy attorney general. Right now, there's a wonderful person named Lisa Monaco, yeah, also a friend and colleague of mine, at the risk of sounding like I'm just dropping names here. She is a terrific person who does a lot of the operational work of the department. The assistant attorneys general, the associate attorney general, all those people. And, of course, 93 U.S. attorneys around the country, all of them political appointees, but none of them a product of a partisan process where you're asked, you know, what is your allegiance, again, to the Republican Party, the Democratic Party? That, too, in my process, never once asked. Never once. Hmm. And again, obviously interviewed by United States senators, and that's how the system works. But the focus is always on what are you going to bring to this job? And are you going to be a U.S. attorney, a prosecutor for all the people? Are you going to bring to this project, this program that you're going to be assigned to do, a notion of justice and of due process and
substantive due rights, substantive rights, all of that can be found out in an interview without talking about what the political process would otherwise dictate.
And the political thoughts of any candidate should be moot in any sort of interview like that.
Absolutely.
If you get to that level, whether or not you're a Democrat or Republican or independent or whatever your career, not voting at all has nothing to do with whether or not you can perform the job as you're supposed to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, you do have to have those basic skills. It helps, frankly. Again, many of my colleagues in the administration that I was proud to be a part of, the Obama administration, the Holder administration, many of us, many of them who are now on television on a regular basis, right. The Joyce Vances and Barbara McQuaid's out there, they were my colleagues, yeah. And they had been in the U.S. Attorney's Office for many years. Again, civil servants like me, like many others, you get a benefit. You also get a benefit from these people who have gone to work for 10, 15, 20 years.
Well, that's a lot of institutional knowledge.
Absolutely,
there, man.
Absolutely, yeah. Right? And they've got pride in the institution. They know how it works, and they know if they see political animation inside a department, when they see it, they will respond in great horror. And again, I myself did not see it, but these are the people who would know it when they see it and stop
well,
it if it happens.
Well, probably 2025, right? Man. Right? Just as can everybody, new administration, bring my cronies in and right. 50,000 people here, 100 attorneys general. We're fine. It's don't worry about it. Trump's got a plan.
Right, right. Absolutely. And that is a part of this. And it goes again to that fundamental notion that we've got a president who does have the authority to nominate people to all these positions. Now they've got to be confirmed by the United States Senate. And again, there'll certainly be those who are opposition to those folks, but they will get confirmed. Again, they're not going to be, with the exception of federal judges, they're not going to be there forever. They're just there for term periods. But the power is there, and you can find not only 93 U.S. attorneys, you can find an awful lot of people who will take those political positions. Again, political, by that I mean you're appointed through the process, not yeah. that the job itself is political.
Right.
But those political appointees, you'll find those people who will say, yes, Mr. Trump, I will do this. I will propose to grand juries. And maybe that's the coming backstop when we think about what Donald Trump may want to do. But nonetheless, I'll present to grand juries evidence or proposed evidence of crimes that may or may not actually exist. You'll get enough people out there who might be willing to do that. That's stunning to say out loud, but that's the kind of people that he is hoping to recruit to these positions.
The best kind of people, Jim, right, right. The loyal people.
Right.
Be loyal. Call the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, host of Amicus, a law review here on Civic Media Saturdays, 9 to 11. Let's get to some of our patient callers. Nathan, you're up. Welcome, Nathan. What do you got for us?
Well, I want to start by saying that Jim does a great impersonation of Adam Schiff in terms of his voice. The first time I heard you, I thought you were Adam Schiff, you guys sound familiar. But anyway,
I'm going to take that as a compliment,
I think, Nathan. I think it's a compliment.
All right, very good. Thanks, Nathan.
Okay, you bet. I'm surprised you haven't heard that before, if you haven't. But is Merrick Garland a member of the Federalist Society? I heard that the other day on some interview, and I was just, if it's true, it explains a lot, because I was in the Kirsich Institute in the 90s when Bill Barr told Bush to pardon all those guys. And it was super unethical. And, Bush Sr., Ollie North, all those guys that were running the drugs out of MENA Air Base in Alabama or Arkansas. All those guys got away with murder, basically. And Cheeto Messiah foments discontent on a daily basis, and he's now back to the big, the big steel lie, where he, last week he admitted that, well, we lost my whisker.
Lost my whisker.
And so, there are so many things he does on a daily basis that constitute fomenting discontent.
Well, like, Nathan, let me get to your drill down to your point, if I may. If Merrick Garland was a member of the Federalist Society, generally conservative, group,
right.
That you think that would be the reason why there wasn't a prosecution sooner than later and a special counsel appointed sooner than later? Is that what you're kind of getting to?
Yeah, Yeah.
All right. All right. Thanks, Nathan. I want to get Jim's comment on here. Thanks for the call, Nathan.
Interesting comment. Nathan, appreciate your contribution to the conversation. Remember that Nathan, Merrick Garland was an appeals court judge, a circuit court judge. And, they may have affiliations very generally. But again, ethics inside of federal judges say that they should not be affiliated formally with those kinds of partisan groups. And so I don't know if that is the case. I will defer to your view on that. Again, it falls in the category of what we talked about before, which is whatever your past affiliations have been, you need to check them at the door, as Maggie Dawn said just a few moments ago, and should not animate what you're doing. I would be somewhat surprised to find that Merrick Garland has a history of long association. Not to say that you can't speak to some groups out there. I'd tend to stay away from those hyper political groups, but you can speak to law student groups at law schools, and you can go around the country and speak to sort of apolitical groups. That kind of thing where you can convey your message well, you want to avoid. And that's actually one of the reasons why we're concerned these days about the Supreme Court making some of those visits, making some of those speeches to those kinds of groups.
Oh, man, right? Jim, there's so much to get to. Right?
How much time do we have today, Dom? Right?
We have another segment, then another hour, and Jim's going to stick around for the whole thing. We got Jess on the board and you on the lines, 855-752-4842. I didn't know that Justice Alito was hanging out with royalty in Europe. Mm. And apparently the princess from Bavaria, I guess, Steve Bannon is a big fan.
The world is a strange place, is it not, Dom?
It absolutely is. It absolutely is. It's Friday. It's the Dom Salvia Show. It's you on the lines, 855-752-4842. Come back with us.
Nowadays, these partisan feelings are so strong that people have lost any sense of justice.
It's a bit snitty.
Welcome back to the show. Thank you for listening. 855-752-4842. To Nathan's point, I did a Google. My Google's not broke. Nathan found the Federalist Society site, and they do have a bio on Merrick Garland under the contributors section, and they have this disclaimer on the bottom of the bio. A person listed as a contributor has spoken or otherwise participated in Federalist Society events, publications, or multimedia presentations. A person's appearance on this list does not imply any other endorsement or relationship between the person and the Federalist Society. And it goes on from there.
Sure. And it could be, again, speculation here. You may have an appeals court judge, a district court judge, who out of just deference and probably would also then engage with maybe the American Constitution Society and the other side of the, maybe you write an article for a newsletter and talk about something apolitical. You talk about the role of the Department of Justice. You talk about the role of the FBI, and you make a contribution to a newsletter, that sort of thing. Maybe you have spoken at some point, but again, you're not endorsing. You're not saying I'm a part of this group. You're simply providing some civics education along the way.
If he was, of course, he was nominated by Obama.
Absolutely.
And the senator never gave him the hearing, right?
Right.
And if he were to be one of those Federalist Society, Trumper types, you think they would have had that hearing.
Absolutely.
I mean? Come on in, Merrick. Welcome to the party, pal.
Exactly, right. It is the sort of thing that would get you some entree. And again, my sense is that appeals court judges, district court judges, federal, state judges as well, do this. I think they're always very sensitive. Again, we talk about the ethics codes, right? That's where this comes in, Dom. Very sensitive to not showing up as something that's overtly political. And if you do, in fact, engage again in the some way with this, you want to have, again, a very clear understanding.
Like Clarence Thomas. Is that an asterisk to this general thought?
Right.
I mean, elite, I don't know, man. I mean, maybe how it used to be, or at least it was perceived to be. Maybe they kept it under wraps. But when you take $4 or $5 million in gratuity, Thomas, it seems like a bribe to me, but let's not digress. Let's get to the lines. 855-752-4842. Mark, you're up. Welcome. What do you got for us?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, guys. Yeah, and it's amazing to me that Donald Trump still fails to recognize the fact that, one of the suggestions in, kind of how I perceive it in Federalist 75, Hamilton actually says more or less that the chief executive is actually a hostage to justice, which means he's a servant of the law.
Yeah.
He's supposed to follow, make sure that the law is actually faithfully executed as part of his oath of office. I mean, but part of the Article 2 is it says, that one of his duties is to make sure the law is faithfully executed. And for our Supreme Court to, not only the whole bribery thing, saying, if it comes after the fact, it's a gratuity, it's not a bribe. No, it's a bribe. It's an emolument which is prohibited under our Constitution. I mean, they're not supposed to be taking anything other than their actual salary while they're sitting in office. I mean, it applies to the president, and it should apply to judges as well, because it actually tears apart the whole perception of
impartiality. There you go. Right? Right,
right,
Mark? Yep, yep.
It certainly does, Mark. Thank you for the call. Isn't that the concern, though? I mean, when who's, Mark's got a point, certainly,
absolutely.
but who's going to enforce it?
Right. That's the point. When you've got an ethics code that can be enforced, as both Elena Kagan and now recently Ketanji Brown Jackson have said, they both said, the thing that we put out, which is really an amalgam of standards and principles out there, not a bad start, but it's got to be enforced by somebody. And that's the difference between the Supreme Court and all the other federal judges, where you can have a chief judge who walks down the hallway and says, you know what, we've got to talk. Let's have lunch about what we're doing here. A Supreme Court is not under those same kinds of strictures and guidelines. That's the enforceable piece of it. You now have two Supreme Court justices who say, we need to enforce it. And interesting, Elena Kagan has said, why we do this? When she's talking to the Ninth Circuit a few weeks back, she says, let's have some lower federal judges. Some people have got a good reputation. I know that will be controversial, too. But lower federal judges, appellate court judges, district court judges who've been on the bench for a while, let's put together a panel. And when it comes to whether or not, for example, the Harlan Crow litigation should be decided in part by Clarence Thomas, have them decide it and make the determination, all these kinds of things, sources of income, as Mark just said.
And it's a great idea conceptually, but I have a hard time thinking that the conservatives on the U.S. Supreme Court would go in on that, specifically for the one reason. Any lower court judge who's already under an enforceable ethics code, to review someone that they're doing, the same thing that they would get in trouble for, it's going to be a no-brainer. Of course they're going to say that.
And exactly. And that's the reason why the very good proposal, Elena, probably will not get a lot of traction here. And the fact that it is a no-brainer, doesn't that make the point, right? These are not difficult issues. We've got other justices, I think, but maybe it was Elena Kagan who said that, yes, she declared the fact that I think it was that Oprah sent her a floral arrangement at some point. And she disclosed that as a way to make clear that she is not on the take. One of the others, I think Ketanji Brown Jackson, talked about receiving a box of donuts from a group one morning. That kind of thing that we all smile at. And we think, if we're reporting that, we are in pretty good shape, because it means that the big things are not out there. We do have concerns about the big things with respect to at least two of them.
And callers, please hang over for the top of the hour. We're not going to get to you. I want to make sure we get all your comments in and give you time to speak. The book deal kind of thing. I get it, but isn't it also kind of a, hey, here's a bunch of money for a book that maybe sold a reader, maybe they won't. It's kind of, to me, a cutout of just giving people money.
It is. It's a concern. And frankly, to be fair, as I know this wonderful broadcast will always be, I've got Sonia Sotomayor out there who's hawking her own book, if you will. Danji Brown Jackson is apparently putting the final touches on her book as well. And it's not to say that they can't write books. You would hope that when the income from that comes in, they would give it to a charity of some kind, right? And that gives us all a little bit more reason to sleep well at night.
Yeah, I don't know, man. If Russia calls up and starts asking them to do a podcast or something, I think I'd be a little concerned.
Then we've got some problems.
Cash those checks. Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. James Santel graciously sticking around for another segment. I hope you do as well. You can join us on the lines at 855-752-4842. We still haven't gotten to, the Georgia case, right?
Yes,
it was Scott McAfee.
Right.
Dropping a couple of charges.
A couple more counts, right?
Oh,
right.
Man, they're slimming it up, but maybe they're just making it a little easier to go.
There
come back
go.
With us. We'll dive into that and take more of your calls. Once again, 855-75-CIVIC.